Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the question-and-answer session, please press star one on your phone. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn today's call to Barbara Reynolds. You may begin.
Good afternoon. You're joining CDC's update on the Ebola response. Today we have two speakers, and then we'll take questions. Our first speaker today is CDC Director Dr. Tom Frieden.
Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon. Today is 1 week since the first patient with Ebola in the United States was diagnosed. And 1 week into a situation, people begin to look back and they begin to think about it, think about what went right, what went wrong, what are the implications for the future. I think we have to keep a couple of things in mind. The first is that globally, this is going to be a long, hard fight. The second is that we can never forget that the enemy here is a virus. The enemy is Ebola, not people, not countries, not communities, a virus. And it's a virus that doesn't spread through the air and that we do know how to control. We do know how to stop it by isolating patients, doing contact tracing, and breaking the chains of transmission. Now, I can say 1 week in that there are real signs of progress, not only in Dallas, but also around the world. And I'll go through a few of them. In Dallas, there are 10 definite and 38 possible contacts being monitored. Each and every one of them is having their temperature monitored. As of today, none of them are sick. None of them has a fever. We'll continue to watch that very closely in the coming days. And Dr. Lakey, Judge Jenkins, and their teams at the state and local level in Dallas are doing a terrific job dealing with what is really an unprecedented situation. In parts of West Africa, we're beginning to see some signs of progress as well. Now, we've been talking about West Africa, but the fact is these are three different countries, and they have three different patterns of disease. And even within each country, there are different patterns of disease. So in Liberia, there are 15 districts or counties. In those different districts, there are different patterns of disease. In some, they have had very few cases of Ebola. In others, they're just beginning to have a big increase in cases. And I'll mention one particular district, which is in a remote rural area. The capital city is known as Lofa. And in that district, that was the forested district that is bordering both Sierra Leone and Guinea. And that three-country border district is what has been the epicenter of the outbreak. That district, that area, has had at times the most cases in all of Liberia. But over the past few weeks, cases have plummeted. Now, we're not sure of all of the reasons, but part of it is that there were enough isolation beds in those facilities, And also that in those facilities, in that district, burial practices were being addressed and improved. Now, we don't know that decrease is going to be maintained, because we've seen waves of diseases before. But we do think that at least in that one community, it's real. And so even in West Africa, even in a place that was the heart of the outbreak, we're seeing signs of progress. And though it hasn't been in headlines, the outbreak in DRC is still contained. The number of cases is relatively small. It has not spread beyond a remote rural area. It's the traditional kind of Ebola outbreak we've seen in the past, and it looks like it's well on the way to being contained in a country that's dealt with Ebola many times in the past. One other sign of progress that hasn't been in the papers recently or until now is a single case in Uganda of a disease caused by the Marburg virus. Now, Marburg is a lot like Ebola, except it didn't have a movie made about it. Marburg has a similar case fatality rate. It's spread in just about the same way, and it's controlled in the same way. One individual in Uganda died from Marburg. Their cause of death was not immediately identified, but we've done important work in Uganda to help the Ugandans better have a laboratory network so they can find cases, have a response network with disease detectives and people who can follow up, and have an emergency operation center to track individual cases. And as a result, they've identified contacts. Those contacts include an individual who was the embalmer who then went back to Kenya. That individual was traced and tracked to Kenya, was tested, does not at this point have Marburg, and the contacts within that patient's family in Uganda are being tested, and so far there haven't been additional cases. I mention this because oftentimes in public health, what gets noticed is what happens, and it's hard to see what doesn't happen. So if we stop the outbreak in rural DRC and we prevent an outbreak of Marburg in Uganda, that may not be headlines, but it tells us that there is progress and gives us confidence that we will be able to control Ebola in West Africa. Now, there's a lot that we're doing based on what we've learned in the past week. For example, we have hospital awareness efforts. We already work regularly with hospital associations. We have an intensive involvement on infection control, technical support, and other issues. And our calls from doctors have increased tenfold since the first case was diagnosed. So there's a lot of awareness, and we're working to increase that even further. We're also working very closely with health departments, city, big city, state, and health department associations. Dr. Leahy and his colleagues in Texas are examples of an excellently functioning health department. We want to make sure that any lessons we learn from Dallas are rapidly incorporated into the practice of health departments around the country. I know that people are eager for more information about travel, and I want to address that for a couple of minutes before concluding and turning it over to Dr. Leahy and then to questions. As the President said yesterday, we're looking hard at what we can do to further increase the safety of Americans, and in the coming days, we will announce further measures that will be taken. Right now, I can give you some basic principles. We want to ensure, and we will always ensure, that the health of Americans is our top priority. We want to ensure that anything we do works and is workable. We recognize that whatever we do, until the disease is controlled in Africa, we can't get the risk to zero here. We may be able to reduce it, and we will look at every opportunity to do that. But we also don't want to do anything that will backfire. In medicine, one of our cardinal rules is, above all, do no harm. If we do something that impedes our ability to stop the outbreak in West Africa, it could spread more further there. We could have more countries like Liberia, and the challenge would be much greater and go on for a much longer period of time. We know how to stop Ebola. That's what's happening in Dallas today. That's what's beginning to occur in parts of West Africa. The signs of progress are there, but it is going to be a long, hard fight. And I think we should all always keep in mind that the enemy here is a virus, and we together can stop that virus. Now I'd like to turn it over to Dr. David Leahy, the commissioner for the Texas Department of State Health Services.
Thank you, Dr. Frieden, and good afternoon to everyone. As Dr. Frieden noted, 1 week ago today, we learned that a Texas patient had tested positive for Ebola. And so I want to thank Dr. Frieden again and the CDC for their support in Dallas, even as they deal with the national and international issues related to Ebola. So here's a brief update on what's happening in Texas. We're at a very sensitive period when a contact could develop symptoms. We're monitoring with extreme vigilance. If a contact develops symptoms, we will tell you. We will also immediately isolate that individual, test that individual, and increase monitoring as we rule out and confirm Ebola. The contact investigation is going exactly as it should. It is in constant motion. We are posting contact numbers daily. They haven't changed since Sunday, but that's always a possibility as we pursue every possible contact. The bottom line is that anyone who needs to be monitored will be monitored. I'm also mindful that the rest of Texas and the effect that this one case has on our hospitals. Hospitals are on high alert right now because they don't want to miss anyone who presents with a travel history and symptoms consistent with Ebola. If we get requests for Ebola testing, we will evaluate that in consultation with the Center for Disease Control. And we are capable to do that testing safely and in timely. I also want us all to remember that the people that we are monitoring really are real people. And I can't think of anything more unnerving for them right now than this as they wait. But we can and we will contain the spread of this disease and protect the public by following our core public health measures. And that's what's going on right now in Dallas as we fight against Ebola. And so, again, thank you, Dr. Frieden, and thank you, everyone, for being part of this conference today.
Thank you, and we'll now take questions starting in the room. Microphone.
Sabrina Tavernisi, New York Times. What explains the, essentially, does the efforts that have been started in the various countries explain the differences in cases in the districts that you were mentioning? I mean, what explains the sort of reduction in that very area that had been that very hot area that now is not?
There are big differences in different areas, and some of those are because of the nature of the spread of disease in those areas. So urban areas may have many more contacts per patient, but some of them are our disease control activities. Those include contact tracing. For example, in Conakry, the capital of Guinea, they've done such a good job with contact tracing that until recently at least, and we'll see if that holds, virtually every one or nearly every one of the cases that arise has arisen in a contact who is being monitored. That allows them to rapidly stop transmission. Also, we've seen some changes in caregiving and burial practices. As people learn about Ebola, they learn the risks and they change their behaviors. USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, has contracted for burial teams throughout Liberia, and they've been ramping up to improve the proportion of burials that are done safely and respond to calls for assistance with burying of bodies. We've also improved infection control in healthcare settings, although that still has a long way to go. So we have a long way to go. We have no way to know what the future will hold, no way to know in some ways what accounts for the progress or whether it will hold. But we are seeing some communities where we've seen progress. Really, I would divide the communities in West Africa into three types. There are communities that have very few or no cases of Ebola. There, our focus is preparedness, such as what we've done in Uganda, where we create an emergency operations center. We empower the county. We identify a way of testing for the virus. We train in contact tracing. We improve caregiving and funeral practices so that we can break the chains of transmission. And we try to keep those areas with lower rates of Ebola and prevent them from having widespread outbreaks. There are also areas in these countries that don't have any Ebola cases. And there, you want to really make sure that there's intensive preparation for the single possible case so you prevent it from spreading widely. And finally, there are areas that are having lots of cases. And there, we break those two chains of transmission by getting patients isolated promptly, and if they die, trying to make sure that no one gets infected in the process of burying them. And we've learned a lot about how to work with communities most sensitively in that burial process. For example, providing communities with the opportunity to observe as bodies are buried so that they can be part of the ceremony even if they don't touch the body. Ensuring that we respect religious traditions in terms of what certain faiths want only people of certain faiths to touch the body of someone who's died. So learning those lessons has been very important, and working with healthcare workers so that they keep in mind the incredible importance of rigorous infection control.
Meg Terrell from CNBC. I'm just wondering, we've been hearing a lot of news about experimental drugs being used on patients here in the U.S. Could you give us any guidance about how you're thinking about that and whether there's any sort of centralized decision-making happening in the U.S. or any advice coming from a centralized place in the U.S.?
In terms of experimental drugs for patients with Ebola, there's a lot of interest. Right now, there were two that we were looking at closely, ZMAP, a combination of three different monoclonal antibodies. It's promising in animal models. It was used in a handful of patients. far as we understand, there is none left in the world, and it takes a long time to make more. A second drug, Tecmyra, is also promising in animal models, although there may be challenges in using it in individual patients, and there's a very limited quantity of that available as well. And then the patient in Texas is getting a third drug, which shows some promise in a test tube model of Ebola, and really it's up to the doctors, the patient, company. We have the NIH, which is very involved in drug development. Parts of the U.S. government have been supportive of that within HHS and within the Department of Defense. So it's really an individualized decision. But I would step back a bit and say that what we've learned about Ebola is how important it is to get the patient's basic care right so that we're treating their fluid and electrolyte balance well. That's critically important to survival. Let's take a question in the room, and then one more in the room, and then we'll go to the phone.
Dennis McDonald from ABC. The Texas patient did receive the experimental drug. Has he had any reaction to that? And what other treatments is he receiving other than supportive care?
The hospital released a statement saying that the patient was intubated, meaning they're on a respirator to support their breathing, that he's on dialysis, meaning that he's getting kidney dialysis to support his kidney functions, and that he's received this experimental treatment. He remains in critical condition.
Doug Sauter from NBC News. There's members of Congress who are urging the CDC to create new guidelines for screening of Ebola at international airports. Is that something you're working on, something that you believe is needed, or is enough being done?
We're working very intensively on the screening process. As the President said, both in places of origin and on arrival to the U.S., and we're looking at that entire process to see what more can be done. I want to provide you with some information about what is being done now in Africa and here in the U.S. In West Africa, in each of these three countries, CDC has had teams on the ground for several months training people within each country to take a questionnaire and take a temperature of every person getting on a plane to leave the country. And that's at the request of the governments of these countries. They absolutely understand that keeping travel going is vital to their ability to stop the epidemic and to their ability to continue functioning as societies. So they're willing to go through any procedures to make sure it's safe. In fact, all three of the presidents directly asked me, tell us what more we can do for screening people so we can make sure that the airlines keep flying, because about half of the airlines have canceled flights and stopped flights since the outbreak started. We, over the past 2 months, the staff that we trained, who are using thermometers that are calibrated and approved by the Food and Drug Administration for use and that don't require touch, they're used from a few inches away, we've overseen the screening of about 36,000 people who've been boarding planes. Most of those, three-quarters of those, don't come to the U.S. Only a small proportion of them come to the U.S. Of those, about 77 had either fever, in the case of 74, or symptoms that made us take them off the line, in the case of the other three. That's roughly about 1 per 500 travelers. As far as we know, none of those 77 people had Ebola. Many of them had malaria. Malaria is a disease spread by mosquitoes. It can't be spread from one person to another. It's extremely common in West Africa and a major source of disease there. So if you're finding fever in people from West Africa, the most common single cause of that is going to be malaria. But we will absolutely look at every step that could tighten that process. Screening at airports, of course, would not have found fever in the patient in Dallas because he didn't have fever for 4 or 5 days after he arrived. But we'll look at all of the options. We're not today providing the steps that we plan to take, but I can assure you that we will be taking additional steps and we will be making those public in the coming days once we can work out the detail. Let's go to the phone for a couple of questions. We'll come back to the room if we have time.
Thank you. We'll begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please remember to unmute your phone and record your name clearly when prompted. I'll introduce you by name. If you'd like to withdraw, it's star 2. Our first question comes from Caleb Kellerman, CNN. You may ask your question.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I'm sure you guys are aware of the case in Spain where a nurse became infected. I'm just curious, I know we don't know all the details of this case, but if it's given any, I guess it's more for Dr. Lakey, and people more closer involved in the treatment. Mr. Duncan, if this has given anyone any pause about the protocols that are recommended in the U.S. and elsewhere. I don't know if you know any more about that specific case, but if it's given you any pause or if you could detail a little bit more the precautions that are taken and recommended.
Dr. Lakey, why don't you start, and then perhaps I'll add a couple of comments at the end.
Thank you, Tom. Obviously, all of us saw that article, and are concerned about what's going on in Spain right now. I guess I would say that I personally went to the ward, and I looked at the protocols that they're doing right now at Presbyterian Hospital, and they take this really, really seriously. They have a ward where a vacant ward except for this individual where they're caring for him. They have a policy procedures that are mapped out at one end of this ward. I guess I'd also say, I went in the ward, I signed in, and they have security there. They have an area where you gown, glove, double glove, put on the appropriate mask, and then also additional personal protective equipment, and then can see the individual and take care of the individual. And they have protocols related to when they're done seeing that individual, making sure that they take it off appropriately and that they can shower before they come back out of the ward. And so they take this really, really, really seriously. They've done so from the very beginning. And so they're following that meticulous infection control practices. And having said that, again, the unfortunate news that's going on in Spain, it can't help but that kind of increase some of that anxiety that's going on right now. But I, again, want to say that they are doing their work very safely right now, and we continue to watch that. Dr. Frieden?
Thank you very much, Dave. And I guess that what I would emphasize is that everything we're seeing in Africa and elsewhere suggests that the way Ebola is spreading has not changed. Where we've seen healthcare worker infections, we have no additional information beyond what's in the media reports about what's happening in Spain. There have also been some recent infections in West Africa that are very concerning. And when we've seen problems, they've come really in two different contexts. One, when it's a new situation and the healthcare team has not dealt with Ebola before. And two, if the team is overburdened. If they're dealing with so many patients or have such a staff shortage that it's possible that even the best and most meticulous people may cut corners. That's why we've emphasized to global partners who are working in West Africa that really 4 or at most 6 weeks is the maximum deployment time. And then you need to rotate out and have another set of individuals there. I know of at least one infection that occurred in an individual who is known to be very meticulous, and we don't know how the infection occurred. But we do know that it occurred when that individual extended his stay past that 6-week period. And in the next 2 weeks that that individual wanted to continue to provide care, the infection occurred. So ensuring that we have a careful, meticulous, well-drilled situation is very important. I said, and I repeat, that we know how to stop Ebola from spreading in hospitals. But that doesn't mean it's easy. It's hard. It means you need meticulous attention to detail. You need a team working together. You need to make sure that every aspect of the protocol is rigorously and meticulously followed. In some of the Ebola units in Africa, one of the keys to success is having someone in charge of that unit who is very, very experienced and who's roving at all times, identifying anything that might possibly be a risk. And there are many things that have to be checked carefully, from the concentration of bleach that's used, to the procedures for putting on and taking off protective equipment, to what actually happens in the Ebola treatment area. Next question on the phone.
Our next question comes from Evan Brown, Fox News Radio.
Dr. Frieden, Dr. Lakey, thank you for doing this. There was an article in a newspaper today talking where they had interviewed some epidemiologists who had worked on previous outbreaks of Ebola, and they say that they cannot say with certainty that the virus would not mutate to other forms, including an airborne form, which would certainly change the dynamic of how it spreads. I'd like you to take a moment to react to that, or at least give us your thoughts or opinions or some technical explanation that the rest of us can understand. And then I have a follow-up regarding that.
Ebola spreads by direct contact with someone who's sick or with the body fluids of someone who's sick or has died from it. We do not see airborne transmission in the outbreak in Africa. We don't see it elsewhere in what we've seen so far. The Ebola virus itself has had a great deal of genetic stability. So between the beginning of this outbreak and more recent isolates, the isolates are about 99.5% similar. Even if we look at the virus over the past almost 50 years since it was first discovered, the rate of change is much slower than many viruses, less than 5%. Furthermore, we know that most viruses don't change how they spread. To do that would require a very large genetic change. And if we look at Ebola as a class of viruses, this is the subspecies here is Ebola Zaire. There are five different subspecies of Ebola virus. They differ by about 40% among them, and yet all of them also spread only by direct contact, not by the airborne route. That is not to say that it's impossible that it could change or be selected out for airborne transmission. That would absolutely be the worst-case scenario. And we would know that not so much from tracking the genetic changes, but by looking at what is happening in Africa. That's why we have teams of epidemiologists from CDC on the ground tracking that. And one of the things we're doing at this point, I discussed earlier, the heterogeneity, the differences within countries. We are now surging the CDC response to go out into the counties most affected, into the areas most affected, and provide intensive support there for the care of patients, for the tracking of the outbreak, and to see what's happening. And everything we've seen till now does not suggest any change in how Ebola spreads.
Transmission, is, I think, is the ultimate boogeyman for a lot of people, especially here in the United States. The cases that we've seen in the U.S. with regard to people being brought in or this the Dallas patient, they've been accessed, they're able to access a major urban center hospital. For those who live in suburbs and even further out where they only have access immediately anyway to more smaller acute care type hospitals, what's the protocol for them and those hospitals? Are they equipped to handle this? And if not, how does someone who shows up at a small little hospital who could be a potential Ebola case, what's the protocol for getting them to a better, not I want to say better, but a more adept facility?
The first point is to suspect Ebola and to diagnose it promptly. That's critically important. In terms of the physical arrangements for infection control, you don't need a fancy facility for that. You need a private room with a private bathroom. In terms of the protocols to be followed, we would work with the state and local health departments to support any hospital to do that. It would not be easy, but it can be done, and it can be done safely. Next question on the phone. Operator?
Yes, our next question comes from Bart Jensen, USA Today.
Hello, thanks for taking the call. Senator Schumer has, among others, has called for greater screening of inbound travelers, and he said that after meeting with you that he expects that you are likely to follow his recommendations. I wondered, for lack of direct flights from these West African countries to the U.S., can you say how you'd determine which airports to boost the screening and how you choose the airports and the passengers?
As I said, we're looking intensively at this, and we anticipate announcing new measures in the coming days. What we can do, working with Customs and Border Protection and with the Department of Homeland Security, is identify even people who have arrived by indirect flights and identify the airports to which they arrive.
Thank you.
Next question on the phone.
Next question comes from Kyle Mazza, UNF News.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This question is for Dr. Lakey, for the Texas Commissioner of Health Services. Dr. Lakey, what is your response to health on the ground? Have there been any other cases in Texas at this time? Thank you.
There have been no other cases in Texas. Our hospitals are on high alert. A lot of conversations have taken place with emergency managers across the state of Texas. I did one of those earlier today where we have the emergency managers on the phone talking about the current situation. We've had similar calls with all the hospitals in the state of Texas. When we do that, we have over 1,000 lines open with hospitals talking about what's going on and making sure that we are prepared. But we have one case. We have the case that's currently hospitalized at Presbyterian. We have individuals that are being closely monitored. The contact tracing continues to go forward. They're being very vigilant in that, chasing down any rumors, making sure that our numbers are solid. And making sure that we are meticulous and making that every individual that's been identified has the monitoring. But we have the one case that has been identified. Thank you.
And Dr. Leakey, if I may, is there any other contacts that you're monitoring who have been tested positive, or are you still waiting on those results at this time?
There's no other testing of any individual in Texas right now. It wouldn't be surprising if we have another febrile patient from somewhere in Africa or West Africa that comes in. When we've done that, we've identified malaria on individuals, but there's no additional testing taking place in Texas at this point. We're capable of doing that. We can do it very quickly. Now that we have our laboratory and that capability in our laboratory, but there's no other testing to my knowledge, and I check with my folks very carefully. No additional testing in Texas as of right now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to reiterate, 10 contacts with definite contact, 38 with possible contact, none have fever, none have symptoms, all have been monitored in Texas. And the steps that Dr. Leakey described, working with health departments and hospitals throughout Texas, those are steps that we are taking nationally. As I mentioned, we'll have a call with health officers from all 50 states, and I'll be asking Dr. Leakey to share some of the key lessons from his experience on that call. We always look to learn from experiences and see what more we can do to ensure that we're consistently improving in our ability to respond. Next question in the room.
Yes, I just wanted to, Sabrina from the New York Times, I just wanted to clarify the 36,000, that's over what period of time?
2 months, roughly 36,000 over 2 months. Okay, we'll take two more questions from the phone, and then that'll be it.
Okay. Our next question comes from Marilyn Marchione, Associated Press.
Hi, thanks very much for taking this. The Madrid officials have said that they are seeking a court-ordered euthanize the pet, the dog of the nursing assistant who has tested positive. So I have two questions. Can dogs transmit Ebola to people? And second, are there any dogs or any other animals involved in the Dallas patient's case or his immediate contacts that you're monitoring?
There is one article in the medical literature that discusses the presence of antibodies to Ebola in dogs. Whether that was an accurate test and whether that was relevant, we don't know. But clearly, we want to look at all possibilities. We have not identified this as a means of transmission. We do know in rural areas of Africa that Ebola can infect mammals. In fact, that's how it spreads, from probably bats to animals living in the forest, and then people hunting those animals. When they hunt the animals and prepare them for serving, they may become infected from the blood that is involved in that process. So we don't think this would be a means of transmission, and I can't comment on the specifics of Spain, and I'll ask Dr. Leakey to comment on Texas.
Thank you, Tom. We are not monitoring any animals at this time. I have no knowledge of any animals being in the house or exposed. Thank you.
Last question on the phone.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Betsy McKay, Wall Street Journal. Your line's open.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to go back to travel screening possibilities for a second. Two of the ideas that have been brought up as likely or reasonable are similar screening methods as those used in the affected country. So temperature checks and questionnaires for passengers arriving from those countries. So I just wonder, Dr. Frieden, if you could comment on, you know, what you think of the the possibility of putting those in place in the U.S. And then secondly, I just wanted to ask quickly if CDC has any involvement in this point, at this point in the investigation of the nurse, in, the case of the nurse in Spain.
In terms of the additional travel screening procedures, those two are certainly ones we're looking at very carefully. In terms of Spain, I'm not aware that we've been consulted, but we would be happy to do so. Before we close, Dr. Leahy, would you like to make any last comments?
Thank you, Dr. Frieden. I again want to thank the CDC for their support here in the state of Texas. We're working very closely with the city, the county, other state agencies, and the federal government to make sure that we are have one team as we do everything we can to ensure that other Texans aren't exposed to this disease. Obviously, this is a very critical week. A lot of monitoring has to take place. Again, my message to healthcare providers in Texas and across the nation is that you can't diagnose this disease unless you think of this disease. You're not going to think about it unless you do the travel history and make sure that everyone knows that information. So we'll continue to respond. We'll continue to watch this very, very closely, and we'll continue to be transparent with the information that we have to make sure that if any individual develops symptoms that we tell you, that we'll care for those individuals compassionately, isolating them, testing them, and monitoring them as we need to, again, protect the public's health in the state of Texas. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Leahy, and thank you and the team there for superb work in the contact follow-up and the communications and the community outreach. I know this is a challenging time, and we feel fortunate to be working with you. Bottom line here is that the fight against Ebola in Africa is going to be a long, hard fight. The enemy is a virus. It's a difficult virus to stop, but we know how to control it. Tried and true public health measures, isolation of patients, contact tracing, infection control, safe burial practices, these make the difference. And we're seeing some signs of progress. The excellent response in Dallas, the control or ongoing control in the DRC, progress in parts of West Africa. But it's going to be a long, hard fight, and together we can contain and control Ebola. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This concludes CDC's update on the Ebola response. For reporters who have additional questions, you're welcome to call CDC at 404-639-3286. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all for attending today's conference. You may now disconnect.